This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The West Virginia House of Delegates has passed a bill that would expand a work requirement for some people who receive federal food assistance. Dave Mistich reports.
House Bill 4001 would create a workforce requirement for some who receive food benefits through the Federal Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, also known as SNAP. According to federal data, West Virginia has made use of $500 million in SNAP benefits in fiscal year 2015, which went to a monthly average of just under 370,000 residents. Under the bill, able-bodied adults without dependents between the ages of 18 and 49 receiving SNAP benefits would be required to document 20 hours per week of work, workforce training, or volunteerism. Delegate Chad Lovejoy argued against the measure and spoke about his involvement at the Huntington City Mission. He says the work requirement has put a burden on food banks and soup kitchens in Cabell County, which, along with Berkeley, Harrison, Jefferson, Kanawha, Marion, Monongalia, Morgan, and Putnam counties, was part of a work requirement pilot program that aimed to increase workforce participation.
We had to go from 3 meals a day to 2. And I say gut-wrenching because we knew that this meant that people would show up for food and we'd have to turn them away. We knew that some of them would go without food. We knew that some would say, well, those folks there at that mission, they said they'd always be there for us, and now they're not. And we knew that may have a more lasting effect on our spiritual mission. I'll tell you, there was no massive influx of population in July of 2016 in Huntington, no loss of a major employer. I believe in my heart that it was the implementation of the pilot program of this bill that nearly broke our back, when all we were trying to do is to feed the hungry.
Delegate Mike Pushkin pointed out the results of a March 2017 report from the State Department of Health and Human Resources, showing that the 9-county pilot study on work requirements for SNAP benefits didn't show increased workforce participation.
I would imagine the purpose of the bill is not to get people back to work, because if that was, it doesn't do that. We have the information from the department that says it doesn't do that. It hasn't put anybody back to work. It hasn't lowered unemployment. It hasn't increased workforce participation in those 9 counties. What it did do, and like the gentleman from the 17th pointed out, it has put a strain on food banks in those counties. It has put a strain on charitable organizations and churches in those 9 counties. That's what it did do.
Delegate Larry Rowe argued that the bill will strip much-needed food from those who need it most. He says forcing the poor to stay hungry will cause some to become angry and possibly more likely to commit crimes while just trying to survive.
Now, what this bill is going to do is to encourage hangriness and aggressiveness in the very population that we don't want to be aggressive or hangry. It's a terrible bill. It's a bill that is going to take food out of the mouths of people. And ladies and gentlemen, they're people. And if you're homeless or you're very poor, you don't have a car, you can't be driving off to someplace to volunteer or to work.
Exemptions to the work requirement include those who are disabled, pregnant, or giving care to a child, an incapacitated adult, or anyone over the age of 65. An amendment adopted by the House Judiciary Committee would also exempt veterans. Delegate Tom Fast, the lead sponsor of House Bill 4001, called the group who would fall under the work requirement as, quote, very narrow. Like other supporters, he says the bill aims to get people back to work and less dependent on assistance.
We do not help a person by perpetuating dependence upon government. Again, if you would just look at the definition of able-bodied person and what is excluded from that definition, these are the people who simply choose not to work. That creates dependency on government. It creates dependency on the food bank. People must be able to help themselves. That's the general rule.
Delegate Michael Folk also spoke in favor of the bill.
What's going on in this country and this state is systemic. This is not asking too much. And all this demagoguery we've heard here today, saying you're going to take food out of babes' mouths, is just that. The gentleman over here from Fayette gave you example after example of all these people that testified, and the bill wouldn't apply.
House Bill 4001 passed on a 78-19 vote, with many Democrats voting in favor. The bill now heads across the rotunda to the Senate. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich at the Capitol.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Mostly sunny today in areas of the Eastern Panhandle and Potomac Highlands. Mostly cloudy elsewhere. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms today with highs in the 60s and 70s. Chance of rain tonight with lows in the 40s. And tomorrow, heavy at times with highs in the 50s. Internationally renowned instrument maker Harold Hazlett died on Valentine's Day this year at the age of 100. Despite being self-taught, the Putnam County native's violins, cellos, and other instruments made of Appalachian wood are considered by many musicians to be among the finest in the world. In honor of his legacy, we have a special feature from Kate Long that first aired 10 years ago.
Harold Hazlett grew up on Turkey Creek in Putnam County. 76 years ago, when he was a boy, he made his first violin.
Well, I just decided to make one day, and I didn't have a pattern or anything. I had to draw my own, so it didn't amount to much.
For 33 years, Hazlett worked as a pipe fitter at Union Carbide by day, then came home and made violins and cellos in his basement workshop at night. His daughter, retired teacher Deborah Hazlett.
Daddy has always been the kind of person to see if he can make it better than the object that he has, or if he can make one like what he sees.
Well, there's this story about Stradivari, you know, that what great things, nobody can beat him. And I would like to make one as good, so that's the way I started.
You're hearing two of his violins and one of his cellos right now, as they will be played Sunday in the public performance, which also happens to be his 90th birthday party. All that work paid off. One of his cellos has won the Violin Society of America's gold medal for tone, competing with instruments from 17 countries. Charleston musician Bob Webb is producing Sunday's tribute.
Harold Hazlett embodies that sense of self-reliance that we so often talk about here in West Virginia. When he was 14, he built his first violin, totally self-taught, much the way someone in a village would have done in the Middle Ages or the Renaissance. And by the time he was in his 40s and 50s, he was building violins that were getting worldwide recognition.
He's unassuming. Did you think of yourself as an artist?
No, not really.
His wife, retired librarian Louise Hazlett.
Harold has always wanted to do things with his hands. He made oxbows when he was just a child. He made furniture pieces when he was just a child. Not having a musical instrument, in Sears and Roebuck catalog there were pictures of these things, and not having the finances to buy these things, you made your own.
Several years ago, Hazlett and Bob Webb visited the Library of Congress Rare Instrument Collection, where the curator listened as they compared Hazlett instruments with those made by Stradivarius.
And I would play the Strad cello and then play the Hazlitt copy. And at one point, the curator looked right at the camera and said, "Well, I don't hear $1 million of difference between these instruments."
That's the sound of Harold Hazlitt building one of his instruments, scraping down the back of a fiddle a tiny bit at a time.
My daughter had a guinea pig here one time, and the guinea pig didn't like to hear me scrape. It'd start squalling.
So far, Hazlitt has built 81 violins, 64 cellos, and one mandolin in the basement of his South Charleston home. Musicians from many states and various countries have trooped down the basement stairs to his workshop. Nationally known fiddler Bobby Taylor, for instance.
He makes a lot of different voices, but they are all very rich, very clean, and they sound old. Every note that you hit sometimes paints a picture. It tells its own story.
Deborah Hazlitt.
People are always asking, how can all of these instruments sound so different? Some of them very bright, some of them rich. And I say it's just like your children, you know, they all come from the same place, but they have different personalities and different voices. People who paint and so forth see things differently. Daddy, as an artist, hears the wood. He can see a piece of wood and say, well, that's going to make a pretty violin. But when he puts it together and does all the magic that he does, that's where the artistry is. He hears the wood. He can thump on it and tell, no, this isn't going to work.
Well, there's a lot of difference in wood, the density, and some of it's really dead, but some of it rang real nice. You can feel wood. You can hear it whistle when you just handle it.
What do you mean when you say it whistles?
Well, like, you hear that louder in some woods than you do in others.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that he does is he'll pick up the wood once he's carved it to a certain point and hold it between his thumb and his forefinger, and he knows exactly where to ping on it, and he can tell you this is a deep note, and sometimes he can even tell you what note of the scale the wood is.
He has a very big sound. It's a big, full sound. It fills the room.
Well, I have a piece of wood here that is a loud piece of wood. Listen to this. If I get it in the right place, you have to hold it on a note.
I hear that. And here is a final bit of typically concise advice from Harold Hazlitt for people who have a passion in life.
Just keep whittling. That's the main thing, I think. Do what you like to do.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, this is Kate Long.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.